Welcome back to Esther, Chapter 8 today, and the crowd of kids at Grandpa's feet has livened up. The great reversal has begun. There's something satisfying about a reversal, where the innocent are vindicated and the wicked get their due. As you read through the Bible, you get the sense that God also loves a reversal. The last will be first, and the first last. From Joseph to Moses to Daniel to Esther and Mordecai, God loves the changeup. And the key for the hero in every reversal story is faithfulness before the flip. Be true to God when you don't see him working. Here in our story, when the edict came down against the Jews, that's when Mordecai and Esther stepped up. Okay, story's about to start. Chapter 8, verse 1. That same day, King Xerxes gave Queen Esther the estate of Haman, the enemy of the Jews. And Mordecai came into the presence of the king, for Esther had told how he was related to her. The king took off his signet ring, which he had reclaimed from Haman, and presented it to Mordecai, and Esther appointed him over Haman's estate. So Mordecai has Haman's job, his estate, and the signet ring, the very ring that once sealed his death. Amazing. But hold on. Haman may be defeated, but the edict to destroy, kill, and annihilate millions of Jews still stands. They're saved, but still in danger, victorious, but still under attack. It's not unlike following Jesus. He won the victory, but we still battle. Like Queen Esther, we still have work to do. Verse 3. Esther again pleaded with the king, falling at his feet and weeping. She begged him to put an end to the evil plan of Haman. So the king extends the scepter, and Esther goes on to plea for an order to overrule Haman's edict. And verse 6, "For how can I bear to see disaster fall on my people? How can I bear to see the destruction of my family?" Esther's compassion for her family is moving. Now you may say, of course she cares. But would we? Do we feel the compassion for the lost? I am often challenged by Paul's words in Romans 9, as he feels unceasing anguish and wishes he could be accursed so that his people, the Jews, might find salvation. Back here, Esther pleads for her people. But King Xerxes has a problem. He tried to set it right, but what else can he do? Look at verse 8. "Now, write another decree in the king's name in behalf of the Jews as seems best to you, and seal it with the king's signet ring. For no document written in the king's name and sealed with his ring can be revoked." Notice that last bit. Under Persian law, a king's ruling is irrevocable. No takebacks. He can't undo it. So he gives Mordecai free rein to write a second edict that will outdo it. Royal secretaries show up, and Mordecai delivers the order for all 127 provinces, written in every script and language, and also in the Jewish script. Verse 10. "Mordecai wrote in the name of King Xerxes, sealed the dispatches with the king's signet ring, and sent them by mounted couriers." Verse 11. "The king's edict granted the Jews in every city the right to assemble and protect themselves, to destroy, kill, and annihilate the armed men of any nationality or province who might attack them and their women and children, and to plunder the property of their enemies." The second edict. Stark. And that language is familiar. Destroy, kill, and annihilate. Mordecai uses the very same words that Haman wrote, as if to say, "You wrote this, your own malice in your own measure. This is justice, eye for eye and tooth for tooth." And the day set for it is the very same day, the 13th of Adar. Yet this edict is not the same, not nearly. Read closer. Why choose the same date? Adar is 9 months out. Why not set the day long before for a preemptive strike? Mordecai chose to give every aggressor time to disarm. Haman wrote an edict to destroy, kill, and annihilate every Jew. No cause and no mercy for anyone. Mordecai copied the words of the first edict, then carefully chose these additions. The right to assemble and protect themselves. How to protect? Just what it says. Kill the armed men who might attack them. Now, don't let the word might confuse you. That's also translated would attack, and the edict language is clearly about protection from armed attackers. But then there's a tricky little phrase. Read 11 carefully. And their women and children. Now, depending on which translation you read, that sentence either appears to say that the Jews can kill armed men who attack Jewish women and children, or it says that the Jews can kill the Persian women and children. That's a big difference. Protecting your own is honorable. Attacking theirs is deplorable. So which is it? Scholars wrangle with this one. The hard fact is, the original text is unclear, and I can't help but wonder, what if Mordecai is vague on purpose? After all, he isn't writing to us. The edict will be read to the Jews and to everyone else, attackers too. The Jews need to hear, when they attack your women and children, assemble and protect. But how do the attackers hear it? The ones fully plotting and preparing to kill Jewish families. I can see them asking, hey, read that back. Whose women and children is that? Sorry, guys, I just read the edicts. Funny, though, you didn't ask me to clarify the last edict, the one that clearly ordered you to kill their women and children. Same words, you didn't seem to mind. Read Haman's edict back again in chapter 3. Kill young and old, women and children, plunder their goods. Now, we rightly protest here because God's people should not behave like the wicked. But here, I think Mordecai is copying the first edict on purpose. You wrote this edict. I just changed the names. And what did Jesus say in Matthew 12? For by your words you will be acquitted, and by your words you will be condemned. To be clear, the Bible never justifies injustice, but God's vengeance is justice. So the edict goes out to every province and every nationality. The Jews will be ready. In verse 14, and the edict was issued in the citadel of Susa. Now everyone knows it's coming. And you can't help but wonder if there's a little pre-echo here of Revelation and the final battle at Har Megiddo, and the pre-echoes go well beyond that. The fall of Haman perhaps pictures the fall of Antichrist, the triumph of Mordecai, faithful as a humble servant, now exalted, and not exalted just to save himself, but to save all God's people. Check out verse 15. When Mordecai left the king's presence, he was wearing royal garments of blue and white, a large crown of gold, and a purple robe of fine linen, and the city of Susa held a joyous celebration. Now there's a reversal. Humble Mordecai in royal garments. Remind you of anyone? Way to go, Mordecai. Grandpa's eyebrows are definitely smiling for this part. In verse 16, for the Jews, it was a time of happiness and joy, gladness and honor. In every province and in every city to which the edict of the king came, there was joy and gladness among the Jews, with feasting and celebrating. And many people of other nationalities became Jews, because fear of the Jews had seized them. No kidding. Outsiders join God's people, who are still scheduled for annihilation, by the way. Both edicts stand. And what of the second edict? Don't we also have two edicts, or rather two covenants? The first covenant is law. Now, as usual, don't twist the connection too far. Haman's edict is evil. God's law is good. But God's law does condemn us to die. And Jesus did not revoke the law. He fulfilled it. And he gave us a new covenant in his blood. He took all that was out to destroy us, our own sin, and the law that condemns, and nailed it to the cross. impaled like Haman. And yet, our battle is not done. We must battle the flesh and reckon the old man dead. Jesus won the war, we fight the battle. But that's the flesh. This story is about people. Does this chapter give us license to avenge ourselves against people? Christian, hear me on this. Jesus gives us a radical alternative. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. Jesus acknowledges eye for an eye and gives us better. Turn the other cheek. Walk the extra mile. Bless those who curse you. Measure out mercy and grace undeserved, and it will be measured to you. Never lose hold of that. That's a Jesus-sized reversal. How can Jesus do that? Because he traded our sin for his righteousness. He took the wrath that we deserve. He ended the vengeance cycle and earned the right to tell us, love your enemies, do better than eye for eye, leave vengeance to him, and trust that he will repay. Read Esther 8 and enjoy the great reversal.
Join us next time as we continue the journey, one chapter at a time. And remember, faith comes by hearing, and hearing through the word.